Welcome to episode 52 of the Geek Legacy Podcast. We'd like to thank all of our listeners for joining us each and every week. We'd also like to take this opportunity to ask that you please support GeekLegacy.com by clicking on any of our Amazon links before you go shopping. On this week's podcast, we welcome filmmaker David Guy Levy to talk about his new digital comic book series, Back to the Future. Later in the podcast, we discuss the Justice League movie and question the overall tone DC seems to have with their films. In video game news, there's a big shakeup over at Microsoft. And finally, we play a fun Canadian trivia game honoring our neighbors to the north. We hope you enjoy episode 52 of the Geek Legacy Podcast. Thank you! Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the Geek Legacy Podcast. I'm Justin, and with me, as always, is David and Randy. How are you two doing today?
Great.
Fantastic.
Yay! Well, today we have a special guest. We are here with filmmaker David Guy Levy, who brought us the feature film Would You Rather? And today, David is here to talk about his digital comic series, Back to the Future. And the comic series asks, what if Eric Stoltz had never been replaced by Michael J. Fox as Marty McFly in the hit film Back to the Future? David, welcome to our podcast.
Yeah, it was a long commute.
Yeah.
All the way to your bedroom.
All the way to the guest room.
So we're real big fans of the Back to the Future trilogy. In fact, Randy goes so far as to say it's like the perfect trilogy.
Well, I don't know about trilogy, but the first Back to the Future movie is widely considered to be like the flawless film.
Yeah, it's the first film that I just ever called my favorite.
And you've never heard anyone say, you know what movie sucks? Back to the Future.
You know what would make it better? Eric Stoltz.
I've heard people give shit to the sequels, but I'm still such a fan and a lover of the trilogy. I still enjoy every minute of them.
We are kind of back and forth on this, too. In fact, I know that you mentioned it at some point in I believe it's issue number 2. We actually had the privilege of reading the first 3 of the 6 issues. And at one point, Bob Gale references the third film taking place in the Wild West and that it shouldn't. And I was just curious if that was how you felt. Like, you don't believe that it should take place in the Wild West.
Whenever I talk about the third film, which I love and I've seen dozens of times, if not many more than that, it's that deep down inside, it's like a Star Wars fan knowing that Jar Jar just isn't good. You know what I mean? And I just, there's a day I knew I just had to wake up and be like, oh, I gotta just joke about how it just isn't as great. So when I, you know, if they were going back in time and giving hints about Crispin Glover's attitude, I thought they might as well get some hints about the third one.
Right. And I mean, I guess I want to just talk about it a little bit. Like, the overall plot was that, okay, so Bob Gale, the nice gentleman that wrote Back to the Future,
he does
a little interview where they reminisce about how the original actress, Melora Hardin, was cast to be opposite of Michael J. Fox. And she was ultimately fire or let go because they replaced Eric Stoltz with Michael J. Fox and she was too tall.
Exactly.
And that's unfortunate for her. Obviously, she didn't do anything wrong. It's totally unfair, but that's show business, I guess.
Exactly.
And then they talk about it over dinner, Bob and Melora anyway, and then they get into his electric Tesla and they're driving in a lightning storm and poof, they're in 1984 and then wacky mayhem ensues.
Yes, and they realize that Eric Stoltz is still cast as Marty McFly. And then at the same time, Bob Gale is also a screenwriter who hasn't had anything as big as Back to the Future since Back to the Future. But, you know, he still had, you know, a modicum of success for sure. And but he's a screenwriting teacher at USC, which a lot of writers do. It's a great gig. And he has a bunch of screenplays in his car that he considered the hits of the 90s that he was teaching a course on. And he brings some of the greatest screenplays for the next 10 years with him. And he chooses one in particular to sort of claim as his own. And that becomes sort of the sports almanac of the comic series as well.
Right. That's what we were going to talk about, too, is that this is very much like Back to the Future 2, where you know, he is like old Biff talking to young Biff.
I always imagined the Back to the Future movies, you know, as one big story. So I just felt like I'd parody the whole thing.
Absolutely. No, it's a lot of fun. And in fact, you know, we were talking about 3 just a moment ago, and most of us, or at least 2/3 of us, don't really like that one very much. But we quote it more than any of the other two films. So it's really funny that that worked out. Like, Dave and I are always saying, run for fun. And he's always like, I done shot that horse. And that's just funny how we quote that one more than the other two.
I don't know. I think I quote number two the most. I do a lot of the Griff language. I just yell at people across rooms. Like, those boys don't work on water. Yeah.
That's a popular one, too. I love that. Yeah. Suits 3.
Yeah. DeLorean, you know, all the Biff stuff is just at its height, I think, in number two. And so for this comic series, once they've replaced, they've made sure Eric Stoltz isn't replaced, and they go back to their alternative present day, they see that Eric Stoltz has sort of become the Biff Tannen from alternate 1985. He's sort of douchey and bigger, and he just has this success and this the Biff Tannen from the fake future or the Back to the Future movies. And right. So there's like I'm sort of pulling from all these different places, but it comes from love. So I hope no one sees it as someone attacking the beloved Back to the Future movies, because it's definitely done with so much love.
And I think that's pretty obvious. There's plenty of throwbacks in the first three issues. I'm sure it is through all six, but there was a couple that really caught my attention, and one was when Thomas F. Wilson and Eric Stoltz are talking about how hot who they think is Melora's mother. And Dave Randy and I always say, you know, say hi to your mom for me. And that totally just popped out of my head when we were reading it. It was awesome. Yeah. And even when he's like, you know, I got to go wax my car later. And it's like, now, Biff, don't con me.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Those are some of my favorites. I once, there's even a line in the movie, in the book, that no one would ever know it's a quote. I just, you know, seen the movie so many times, the quotes just sort of come up. Like, there's this line where in Back to the Future 2 where Michael J. Fox is playing his future daughter, and he comes down the stairs and he goes, Mom, is that you? You know? And I even had a bet with my sister. There was two moms, not one mom, and she owed me $100 once, you know, over the line. There's a line in the comic book where I threw it in, and no one will ever really notice it's a quote, but I just know it is, you know? Even subtly, just trying to throw stuff in if it fit.
Oh, absolutely! Like even when when Eric Stoltz is yelling at Melora for like he wasted all this money on rehab. That's like how it was when Biff comes storming into the hotel room. That was kind of funny too. Like, you know how much dough I've wasted on?
Yeah, totally.
Like, I guess we do quote too a lot, guys. Like, read my facts.
Oh yeah.
We do that.
Oh yeah. Not is that needles?
Yeah, or no, it's
saying it to the guy saying it.
Takashi or whatever.
Yeah, Katashi-san,
McFly, Broad Place.
That is awesome. And even like there's a couple of fun throwbacks too, like the Texaco gas. You can see like an Exico like in the background when they make it to 1984, and then like the Olympics. The 1984 Olympics, I thought that was kind of cool.
You saw that, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was always wondering if people are going to be paying that much attention to the art as well.
Yeah. Well, I was curious because Randy and Dave are real suckers for like Easter eggs and stuff, so I wanted to be up with them.
Well, did anyone see Andy Kaufman? Andy Kaufman is bussing tables in, I think, the third issue, but at the Jerry's Deli. It could be the second issue. But yeah, he's busting tables. I was that, and I just remember that Andy Kaufman used to bust at Jerry's, so I threw him in there.
Nice.
And then I always think Hitchcock deserves a cameo in anything, so Hitchcock's got a cameo.
Right. Of course. Yeah. And then I liked it when Melora came home to bars on her windows. I thought that was
a fun. Oh, yeah. I don't know.
And the guy coming after her with a baseball
bat. Oh, not be terrorized!
Tell him I'm not going to sell.
I always think that my obsession with these movies is so much greater than other people are used to. So having a conversation with people who literally obsess as much about this movie as I have is so refreshing.
We could do this.
Seriously. Yeah, we could sit here and quote the movie for days.
Have like a whole conversation and nothing but Back to the Future quotes.
Oh. Yeah.
Awesome. I think that's one of the great things about these books, too, is you'll be able to go back to them over and over again and still find new Easter eggs and little tidbits that you may have looked over the first time.
Oh, I hope so.
That's a lot of fun.
Well, you know, I spent 3.5 years looking at the art before we locked it, because one thing I knew is if I wasn't going to make this a movie, I wanted it to look as cinematic as possible. And so we made sure every page was the same quality and stature of what most cover art gets to be these days, but instead doing it on the insides as well as the outside, you know? And so, you know, this guy who Jeffrey Spokes, who does this amazing cover art, you know, I approached him, I said, you know, I got 130 pages that need to be that quality. And he's like, and normally, just so people, you know, your listeners know, normally, like, you know, someone who does cover art gets usually paid between $1,000 and $3,000 a page. But someone doing the inside will get $100 to $300 because it's a lot quicker, it's a lot more rushed, it's a lot less polished. But I knew that every frame needed to be polished and beautiful. And first I said, you know, would you work at the regular inside rates? And would you do, you know, spend 3.5 years of your life drawing something that's not even your idea? So it was hard to sort of get him excited about it, but you know, I gave him the pages. I had adapted it into a comic screenplay or page play, or, you know, just a comic adaptation, and where every panel was sort of spelled out, and he looked at it and he said, you know, I'll read it, give me a couple weeks. And 3 hours later he called back and said, I love it. I've been wanting to do this kind of thing for years, but no one's ever had an idea that sort of I thought was worth it. And he jumped on board. And then everything slowed down for 3.5 years, and then we got all the art. But it was awesome, and having that much time, it just, there was complete autonomy. I didn't, any of the ideas I had when imagining the story, you know, I'm used to working in film where a budget and time quickly change the way you're going to show or tell a story. And with this medium, I got to tell a story completely from my imagination without having to think of budgetary and time constraints. So it really is just pouring out of my head. So I'm going to definitely do more comic work for that reason, because I have so many stories that I just know belong to the fullness that the imagination can give and that film can't. So unless you're, you know, Joss Whedon or someone making, you know, $200 million movies, it's tough. Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, has anyone seen it like Bob Gale or Eric Stoltz or anyone that was involved in the making of Back to the Future? Has any of them seen it, and what was their reaction if they had?
I haven't shown anyone. I feel sort of creepy enough writing the story. You know what I mean? I just would feel really uncomfortable approaching one of them and saying, hey, I've been writing this. And I started writing this in 2001 and then put it in a drawer for like 8 years. So it really has been something that's been a part of my life for over 10 years. And I always thought it was a story I wanted to write because I liked it so much and it made me giggle. But I never thought it would be a story I'd share publicly or you know, out in a large group. And so, you know, I wrote it. It was fun. And then just having it all that much time pass and going and making it, I just felt like if someone came to me and said, here's a comic book I've been working on for over 10 years, it's all about you, I would be calling for a restraining order so fast. But you know, I hope if it comes to them, you know, when they're in a good place, and I hope that they enjoy it. I don't want them to take it as a, you know, I wouldn't want anyone to take offense to it. It's if anything, it's a love letter, you know. And but you know, Eric and Melora also didn't have the benefit of being a part of those movies, so I don't know, you know, how happy or unhappy they would be about it, but I wasn't doing it to taunt them. I was doing it to say you got to be a part of the history of it, you know, regardless if you were in the movie or not, you know.
Absolutely. Do you watch Fringe by any chance?
I've seen Fringe. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, when they go in the alternate universe, there's a part.
It's the Eric Stoltz thing.
Yeah, which I think is so cool. I was like, oh my god, that's bad.
I was watching that episode live the night it aired, and I remember, you know, we were already drawing the book at this time, and I remember just laughing and going, "This is great."
It is. So you're not the only one that feels that way.
No, it's just, you know, it's an alternate universe. We're not burning the negative of the original film, which I love and worship. We're just telling our own stories here on the side, you know?
You are trying to ruin Teen Wolf and Adventures in Babysitting and leave in Las Vegas.
Yeah. Well, you know, I figured to see what it would have done for his career is an important part of this story.
Right, absolutely. Well, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Now, you'd mentioned something about likenesses earlier. Now, since presumably they don't really know that this exists because you haven't brought it up to them or anything, do you anticipate there being any kind of issues with likeness rights or anybody feeling up in arms about it?
Well, I mean, that So that was always the worry of why I didn't show it to anyone for years. Was I just figured, like, how am I going to get everyone to say yes to this? And then, you know, I went in a drawer and I just read it with some friends one day, and they told me I had to just get the story out there. So I called up a lawyer who is really good, and he's done stuff. He's done Super Size Me. He did Room 237. So he really knows, you know, what you're allowed and not allowed to do under the law. And he gave me extensive advice, and he even helped me, you know, set up the clearances and the insurance policies and get it really legit and had it cleared by legal. And so by the time I was done with him, I knew going into the art process that not to worry, that, you know, I was within my rights and I could tell the story still, you know, and using their likenesses is definitely allowable in this instance, because, you know, it's a part of pop culture and it's parody and fair use. And so America's good for that.
Yeah. It's probably easier to get the likeness rights to use their image rather than a character's image, you know, to use the likeness of a real person rather than a fictional character.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can use Michael J. Fox, but you can't use Marty McFly. You know what I mean?
Oh, totally. I wonder if you could use, that's a great question. I want to see someone try to take, Mickey Mouse is a brand, so then you're messing with the brand because that's the image, right?
Mm.
I don't know. I mean, that's a good, I'm going to look into this. Maybe I'll make some Mickey Mouse horrible horror movies.
Mickey Mouse goes after elementary schools. Like, my wife's a teacher, and Disney's sent cease and desist letters to teachers' classrooms if they have like Mickey Mouse stuff up.
Wow.
Yeah, so don't mess with the mouse.
Well, it's a good thing that Disney is a supporter of the Young Storytellers Foundation.
So let's talk about the Young Storytellers Foundation. The way it's going to work is the first three issues of Back to Back to the Future are free, and then
half the book.
Right, so half of it. It's a six-part series, so then people can buy, once they realize that this is amazing and they have to finish the story, then they have to buy issues 4, 5, and 6 at $2 each,
yeah.
And the proceeds will go to the Young Storytellers Foundation. And from what I understand, the foundation develops literacy through storytelling, and their mission is to inspire children to discover the power of their own voice.
Yeah, so, you know, I've seen them in work in Los Angeles. I think they've just started to branch out, and I think I was told recently they have an office in New York now, but, you know, they work with underserved arts poor students in the public school system, and they bring in mentors, which I've tried to be before, but, you know, it takes a lot of commitment to be a mentor. You need 9 straight weeks, and, you know, if you have a 9-to-5, it's really tough. But, you know, they have these amazing people come in and mentor the kids to write their own stage plays, and the kids aren't guided creatively at all. That, you know, they tell a story that they want to tell, not that they're told to tell. And then professional actors come in and act them out. And they've had, you know, the cast of Glee act them out. They've had some of the coolest, youngest, hippest actors, some of the favorite actors come into their schools and read their plays to their classmates, you know. And it's pretty awesome to sit there and watch their eyes just like bug out of their heads while that's happening. And it encourages, you know, creative writing in communities that don't normally have that encouragement. And I think that's important for me, because I always had that opportunity and that encouragement in my life. And I wouldn't be a happy person unless that happened to me. So, I'm thinking, this is great. This is a story that I just wanted to tell because I didn't want anyone to tell me what story I couldn't tell. And I sort of wrote it almost because people told me that it would never get made. And then I still found a way to sort of tell it, you know, to get it out into the land of stories. And that's what these kids are doing every day, and what this foundation's helping them do. So it sort of just fit like a glove when I could take this particular story and say, I can't mentor those hours, but if this comic book, you know, can help your cause, I didn't make it for money. You know, it took us 4 years. There was no financiers, just us and the time we had and my savings, and it doesn't have to be for nothing. It can go to this great cause. And to be honest, you know, the Young Storytellers Foundation has been so supportive that I almost feel like I'm going to owe them more than they're going to owe me, because everyone's talking about the story now. And, you know, I want them to also be talking about the Young Storytellers. So.
Perfect. Yeah, sounds like a great foundation. So what's next for you after your 6 issues are over?
What's your next plan?
Well, you know, Would You Rather is going to be on DVD July 9th. So if anyone missed the VOD release, it'll be back out on VOD again, and it'll be on DVD, and they can check that out. But as far as the next thing, I'm sort of writing it right now, but it's too fresh to talk about. But one day I'll come back and we'll tell you all about it.
Awesome.
Look forward to that.
Thanks, guys.
Anything else you want to plug while you're here?
Nah. But yeah, just plug the comic. Thank you so much for giving us the time to talk about it.
No problem.
Yeah.
Next week we'll have a giveaway, so our listeners and readers for GeekLegacy.com will have a chance to win all six books in one fell swoop.
Yeah.
Fabulous prizes.
As long as they tell their friends to then go pay for them.
Right. Absolutely. Well, it's a worthy cause, so we'll definitely do our best.
We'll give six people one individual copy.
And they got to piece it together.
Yeah.
Or just get together.
Yeah.
Yeah, just read in a circle.
Yeah.
Great.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for joining us, David. It was a pleasure, and best of luck to you.
Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
Hey, guys. I'm here.
Yay.
Just in time for David's movie news.
Woo.
Movie news. Fun stuff, actually. Big weekend at the box office. We had two big newcomers in The Heat and White House Down vying for box office supremacy, and both falling short of Monsters University returning as the number one film in America for 2 weeks in a row. Have you guys seen Monsters University?
No. I don't like school.
Yeah, you guys are dumb. It was great.
School's stupid.
School. I like school.
No, I'm not interested at all. It's like Revenge of the Nerds, but not really, because it is monsters.
It's pretty much identical to Revenge of the Nerds.
Is there Bush?
Do we get they're sort of. One of the creatures is all Bush.
Oh.
But it made $45 million more, bringing its total to $170 million for 2 weeks, which is not too bad. Coming in second place was newcomer The Heat, the Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy movie. Directed by Paul Feige, who did Bridesmaids. Did you guys see that one this weekend?
No.
Did you guys see movies?
No.
I haven't seen a movie in a really long time.
So I'll stop asking if you've seen it and just say it was good.
Sorry.
It was pretty good. It was, you know, it was a nice little spread. It's 65% women, which is obviously much higher than the normal demographic for moviegoers being males. But so it made $39 million, which was surprisingly the highest grossing film of opening for Sandra Bullock's career. I kind of found that surprising. It was also the highest opening for Melissa McCarthy, like starring roles. So it did really well. Third place was World War Z. Dropped 55%, which wasn't terrible. Its 2 week total is up to $123 million. Which also surprisingly, what do you guys think is Brad Pitt's highest grossing film of all time? Domestically.
Titans of the Fall.
No.
Come on the
way. Wait. Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
way to use Google. Or Geek Legacy, if you will. Yeah, Mr. and Mrs. Smith is his highest grossing film at $189 million.
No, I totally guessed that.
I was kind of surprised to see that his highest grossing film was $183 million domestically. But what can you
is
do, I guess?
Is that not very much?
I don't know, we're in this era of movies making like $600 trillion and Brad Pitt's like one of the biggest movie stars. And I was just surprised that, you know, maybe one of the Ocean's movies or something didn't make, you know, he's never cracked $200 million, which seems kind of weird. I mean, not bad. I mean, he's obviously a good-looking guy who kills zombies, but to each their own, I guess. Coming in fourth place was the other new movie, White House Down, which kind of made a disappointing $24.8 million. White House Down?
Oh, yeah.
With Channing Tatum
and
Jamie Foxx. Its budget was $150 million before marketing, so it's got a long haul before it makes up the $250 to $300 million budget. A lot of people are contributing the Down box office for White House Down as that Channing Tatum's target audience is women, and they all went to see The Heat. So maybe next week he'll rebound. Maybe not. Doesn't look very good. It's got pretty terrible scores or ratings.
Maybe people just don't want to see a dumb movie about like another dumb movie about the White House getting attacked.
That doesn't sound very, very, very Hollywood savvy of you. I don't think that's it. I think it's women.
I think that this should have
been. It's women.
This probably would have done better if it was like a Tony Scott film or something, but because I mean it kind of reminds me of Last Boy Scout, I guess. It just kind of has like that buddy cop kind of vibe to it, and I think Tony Scott was pretty good with two dudes tearing shit up in movies.
That's a very good observation. A lot of people are saying just that, Justin. You're a smart man. They're saying that Roland Emmerich, who directed it, did Independence Day in 2012. And The Day the Earth Stood Still, they were saying that he was kind of hamstringed with such a small environment that usually his movies are these big global set pieces, and that it may have been a poor director's choice. So, get you, Justin, on the inside.
But my pick is no longer with us, so that would have been a problem.
Yeah, he was definitely not available to take the role.
This guy's dead.
He's dead, Jim.
And then rounding out the top five was Man of Steel, making an additional $20 million, rebounding slightly from it had a pretty terrible second week. But it has now made $248 million for 3 weeks. So,
is that a success now? Is that considered a box office success or no?
Yes and no. Man of Steel was an interesting one because with all of the product placement with like Gillette and Sears and every other company in the world, it had made like over $200 million before it even had shown. And it'll track well overseas. It'll track well on DVD and video on demand. So it's a success, yes. Is it Iron Man 3 or The Avengers? No. But it's enough to where they'll probably do a Justice League movie, which kind of made me think the other day, because all of the Marvel movies, you know, while they're all completely different, they all kind of have the same visual style and kind of tonality of them. And that's right, I invented a word. And looking back at, you know, the Batman films and the Man of Steel, it's got that bleak kind of, you know, almost joyless storytelling. And I was thinking, do we want the DC universe to be like that? Like all of it? Am I making any sense? Edit it out.
I don't know. I can tell you that I like Batman and I like Man of Steel, and so I guess that means I like that direction. I'm okay with Marvel being fun and festive and DC being dark and crazy. Maybe that's what DC stands for, dark and crazy.
There you go.
But I mean, like Man of Steel is a good movie, yeah, but it's really a like kind of like a joyless film, or even like I don't mean that like in it's no fun to watch. I mean that in it's not
like a marriage without sex.
Yeah, exactly. So where, I mean, even if you take like Nolan's Batman trilogy, like it's dark and edgy, but I mean they had Lucius Fox and they had Michael Caine as Alfred, and they really brought like a comedic presence when they were on screen, and so it kind of broke up.
Give it some heart.
Yeah, but it like broke up the monotony of like, I'm Batman. I'm not wearing hockey pads.
Right. No, I see that. I'm okay with it being a little bit dark, because I feel like I take the movie more seriously when it's kind of got that more adult theme to it. I have a hard time connecting with it when it's too campy and too cheesy. I think that what's interesting about Iron Man, for example, is that it was fun to be a superhero, at least with the 2008 Iron Man. It was like, holy shit, this movie is so amazing. It's so fun. I'm laughing. I can't stop laughing. And it's a superhero movie. But then when they got all serious with Iron Man 3, I was kind of like, eh. And even Iron Man 2, where he was just kind of like a drunk, they tried to go a little serious with it, and I didn't enjoy it as much. So I just think it depends on the franchise, to be honest with you. I don't think Batman should be fun and festive. I think that he is, you know, he's always like, I am the knight, I am Batman. Then I need him to be mean. And I like the idea of kind of passing that on to Superman a little bit, and that he was upset. You know, here was a guy that got angry, and we've never seen Superman really get angry, and for whatever reason that clicked with me, maybe because I never really liked the character, and I think that Man of Steel made me like Superman a little bit more.
Right. Now, but do you think that tone would translate to the rest of the DC universe, like Flash,
for example? I think they're all different. I think Flash isn't a serious character. I mean, maybe he should be a little bit more fun.
Well, that's what I was saying is back to what I was trying to say originally that I butchered horrifically, was that, you know, in order to tie all the films together, they kind of have to be similar in style and tone. And if you look at the Marvel films, they're all, even though they're very different stories, they all have a very similar tone throughout their films.
Right. No, I guess I don't have an answer. Maybe they have to be the same tone, but I don't see the Flash as a serious guy. I think he's a fun guy that likes to even kind of toy with his
villains.
For his villains a little bit, you know, like, oh, you can't catch me, look how fast I am, ha ha ha.
Don't play with your food.
Yeah, that's kind of the way he is, and I think that works.
No, and I am agreement 100%.
Maybe that's why it won't ever work. Maybe that's what one of their problems is that they have this such a crazy mixture of characters.
Right, it's too much 1960s Batman.
Yeah,
it doesn't. The Batusi.
It doesn't work.
But cool. Well, that's all I got for the box office there. Just real quick, I don't know if you guys saw that Peter Jackson said he was not bringing any Hobbit Desolation of Smaug footage or information to Comic-Con. Did you guys see that? Have you heard about this? Have you seen this?
Yeah. Read it on geeklegacy.com.
You should. It's great.
That.
Do you think that's true, or do you think he's trying to pull the wool over eyes and he's going to blow us away with something?
Well, why bother going to Comic-Con at all if you're not going to try and pimp your movie? It's coming out in a few months.
But I mean, do you think but he said he's not going to go at all, but I'm saying, do you think he's lying to us and that he's going to show up?
Maybe, but I mean, maybe it's just because he's tired of everyone talking bad shit about it. Maybe he wants to give people a break and then re-excite people later on in the year.
I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. I'm not, you know, I'm not needing a change of shorts, but
I'm in line right now.
You're excited. Feel these nipples.
Yeah. Look at glass. I'm excited. I'm definitely going to see it. And that's saying a lot because I've only seen like two movies this year. So I'm definitely going to see it. But
yeah, that's all I got for movies. Anything going on in the video game world? Do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah. Is that your way of saying that you want me to put the bumpers back in the podcast?
I thought I was. You saying I'm not good enough? You gotta...
No, you're perfect bumpers. I like it.
You're no Michael Winslow.
Dang it.
But then again, who is?
Go get my noose.
What's he doing these days?
I don't know.
Police Academy on Ice.
But you know what the thing is? All his sound effects were like 80s sound effects, right? Like all his electronic devices were
all
like
8-bit sounds.
Exactly. So it's like once 1990 rolled around, he was just kind of obsolete.
Right.
Like Gutenberg.
Sega Genesis came out and he was out the door, you know?
Sega does what Michael Winslow don't. Genesis does. Sorry. You were saying Justin before. I interrupted you.
That's right. Yeah, a couple things going on in the video game world. Let's see. Xbox president, Don Matrick, who I know...
Ooh.
Yeah, some people are very passionate about him. I know Stephen Janes, one of our guys. He thinks that that Mr. Matrick comes off as... a bit pretentious, to say the least.
That was a fine choice of words.
Like that.
You gussied that up.
So, yeah, he has jumped ship. He is no longer a part of Microsoft Interactive Entertainment. And I think that that's kind of a good thing, considering how Microsoft did the whole 180. And they're making some changes to their box. And perhaps a new face to go with the console is in everyone's best interest. I have a feeling that that he will do quite well over at Zynga Entertainment.
Did you go to Zynga?
Yeah.
Zynga was closing.
Well
I guess that's the end of his career.
That's just it. They closed a lot of their studios, but maybe they think that he can turn things around.
Oh, nice. Well, I hope he does. I wish him nothing but luck, as long as he doesn't design another Xbox.
I don't know. Zynga is one of the worst companies.
You don't like draw something?
Every industry. No, just the company culture and the environment for employees alone, I hear, is pretty shitty.
Yeah. Maybe he's going to change that.
Speaking of bad working conditions, I was playing that game Spartacus Legends, where you mm-hmm. own slaves and you train them as gladiators, and then if they die, they're like permanently dead.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of lousy working conditions. And
victory or death.
Yeah.
Victory or death.
You can actually pay. I take that back. It starts off at kind of a small fee. Like you have you gain obviously money when you win fights, and if your fighter were to die, getting like his head chopped off or his arm cut off or whatever, you can pay like 200 silver, and then you're able to play him again, and then it jumps up to 500, and it just keeps increasing to the point where it's just too goddamn expensive. But I like to play it as it were if real, and so when my gladiator dies, then I just send them off to the mines. Like, or if they're dead, then great, but if they got their arm or leg chopped off, then I just send them to the mines and I'm done with them.
Do you do the whole like thumbs down thing?
No, you don't. But there is like a crowd factor where if the crowd is in your favor, then you get to murder the gladiator, which is kind of cool. I cut off a guy's face. I put my dagger to the side of his face and then just pulled really hard, and his face came off. It was nuts.
Killed the guy with the trident.
Yeah, exactly. They have that. I died. Some jerk off with the trident killed me, and I was pretty livid at first because the controls are kind of wonky, and I was not ready to say goodbye to my little gladiator.
Oh, poor guy.
Yeah, he's done though. He got they stuck a fork in him. He was done.
Took his face off.
Exactly.
No more drugs for that guy.
Yeah. So let's see. Moving on. Spartacus Legends. That is free to play. I can download it on your Xbox there or your PlayStation 3. Anyway, most of us, I think, played the Walking Dead game. At least I know Amanda and I did.
Yep.
And the new DLC comes out this week. It's going to be $5. Yay. It is The Walking Dead 400 Days. And it's going to be like five little stories all rolled into one. So that'll be lots of fun. $5 for everyone. So
that's a good deal.
Yeah, not too bad. Amazon's having like their crazy summer sale. I know everyone's looking forward to the Steam sale, myself included. No word yet on when that's going to happen. It's typically on a Thursday, so it could be the 4th, which would be great because then you have an awesome long weekend to play amazing games. Or it could be the 11th. So who knows? The jury's still out on that one, but pay attention. It could be the 4th for the Steam sale. And then what else we got? There's something else. PlayStation Plus. We talked about that a little bit last week. I don't even know if it made the cut, but you get free games every month when you have a PlayStation Plus account, and Battlefield 3 is going to be available to people on Tuesday. So that'll be a free download if you are a Plus subscriber. You can head over to the PlayStation blog, and they'll give you a total list of what's happening for the month of July. I think it's Battlefield 3, Metal Slug, freaking Jet Set Radio, which is awful. Oddworld, that'll be coming. So yeah, some couple of fun games.
Yeah, sounds fun. Okay. I like Oddworld.
You know what else though? They're having like a crazy sale. It's like a PlayStation Plus sale where you're gonna be able to get a ton of games for dirt cheap if you have a Plus account. Like Arkham Asylum's only gonna be $5. Freaking Mortal Kombat's only going to be $5. Scott Pilgrim vs. the World's only going to be $2. Shadows of the Colossus will be $5. Ratchet and Clank Collection, $7.50. Come on. All really good games for dirt cheap. That happens. I think that's happening right now. Or at least soon. July 2nd.
Sweet. So by the time you listen to this.
Yeah. But listen to this, that should start. And it's like a 2-week event. And the first week is like Black Ops, Spider-Man, Batman, Lord of the Rings, Aragorn's Quest, Mortal Kombat for the Vita, and then Mortal Kombat for PlayStation 3, Prince of Persia, Scott Pilgrim, Shadows of the Colossus, and Ratchet and Clank. That'll be your first week of games. So that's good stuff.
Nice.
Make it happen. Too bad it takes like 20 goddamn years to download shit on your PlayStation 3. I mean, I have Fios, and that shit still takes all day for me to download.
Well, it's so inconsistent. Like, sometimes, like, even, like, updates will take, like, forever, and then sometimes they take, like, half a millisecond. Like, I don't know. It's just, for me, sometimes it's fast, sometimes it's slow. Take the good, you take the bad.
That's it. I'm done. Video games. We got a list? Randy?
We do have a list.
A list?
In the spirit of the Back to the Future interview that we just did, I've got a fun little list here of 7 things Back to the Future guessed correctly about the future. You guys ready for this?
Born ready.
All right. Back to the Future says fingerprint access will be widely used by the average person on simple everyday tasks. We see that in Back to the Future 2. And you know what? It's actually coming pretty damn true. There are little fingerprint scanning things pretty much everywhere you go, and even the Disney theme parks are now using that to ensure that if you have a multi-day pass, that you are who you say you are, and you're not passing it off to friends and relatives. Yeah, they haven't implemented it in California yet, but in Florida, when we were there last October, we had to get our thumbprint scanned every time we went in or out one of the parks.
That's nuts.
That's kind of scary, actually.
Well, there was a big scan.
Are there now, and in California, they're there. They're just not working yet.
Yeah, it's definitely coming here. It's just a matter of they were testing it over in Florida first. But yeah, and that's because there was a big epidemic of people buying multi-day passes and then trying to sell other, like you going one day, then selling the rest of them on Craigslist. Or they were selling bad passes is what happened too. Like a couple days, like it was a three-day pass and all 3 days had already been used or something to that effect. And they go and they sell it to somebody thinking they're getting a great deal for $50 for the pass. But lo and behold, it's not working. Here's the next thing that Back to the Future says. Video calls are nothing special, and we use them frequently in the future. And that is goddamn true. Back to the Future also says the average home will have at least one large flat panel big screen TV with the ability to watch multiple channels at once.
Done.
Wow.
Done and done.
No one has two televisions.
It's a rerun. It's a rerun.
Now, this next one says that kids will be using floating skateboards, and although we're probably never really going to see a true hoverboard, there are those crazy skateboards that just have one wheel at either end, and it kind of almost looks like it's hovering. It's all kind of twisty, and it's, have you guys seen those things?
Yeah, they're called the Wave. I'm not going to give you this one, Randy. That's not a hoverboard.
Well, I'm not saying that this is everything that was correctly predicted. It's just most of the stuff on this list actually came true, but this one's kind of riding the line. I definitely agree it's never really gonna happen, but the next one is actually pretty good. Mr. Fusion. Now, we're ever really gonna have fusion reactors built into our cars, but you do see cars running off of used oil, like fry oil from fast food restaurants, and people are converting trash into natural means of fueling their cars. And while it's not as elegant as the little Mr. Coffee looking Mr. Fusion on the back of the DeLorean there, it's still pretty damn cool. Here's a big one we can all agree with. Back to the Future says everything from the 80s has become antiques. You just look in the antique store window and you see all the 80s stuff, like the little 1984 Macintosh computer and all that shit, all commanding a very high price. As I'm looking at a still here, I even see a little stuffed Roger Rabbit toy. But yeah, pretty much everything from the 80s is totally collectible now. Thus referenced by the fact that I have a shitload of 80s movie posters and action figures in my office as I'm talking to you right now. Let's see. This is fun from your favorite movie, Back to the Future 2. Holographic movies will replace their 2D ancestors. Well, I don't think we're quite close as holographic movies, but we are getting really high-quality 3D. So that's kind of close. And hey, if Tupac could come back from the dead in holographic form, movies are just right around the corner.
Heck yeah.
I like in Total Recall when she's doing like the tennis instruction video. It's like a hologram.
Yeah.
I think that would be cool.
Yeah, it's something almost kind of interactive. Like, yeah. I see that like workout videos or something, you know?
Yeah. Nigma Tech on every box. Never mind.
Fun stuff.
I got you.
I don't know what's going on.
Back to Batman Forever, Amanda. First it was Total Recall, and then we jumped to Batman Forever.
Keep up, man.
Come on.
Which one is that?
That's the one that's good.
I'm saving the best for last.
Is that the one with Alicia Silverstone?
No, that's the better one. That's Batman and Robin.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Right. That's people would argue that Christopher Nolan pretty much plagiarized.
You know what? That's absolutely right.
Yeah. I saw Inception. It's shot for shot remake.
Yeah, it really is.
You were saying, Randy, number one, best for last.
Best one. Video games without hands.
I like it.
Stupid Kinect.
It's like a baby's toy.
But what video game do we play without hands?
Kinect.
Oh. But that doesn't work. It's too gimmicky and stupid.
But it works. It does work. It works well enough.
That's dumb.
You can talk to it.
Fine list, Randy. Fine list.
Woo!
Yay.
Do we have a game?
Uptown all the way.
Do we have a game?
Oh, do we have a game, eh? Our favorite Canadian, our favorite Canuck up north there, Stephen Alba Wood, he'd be sending us a game about Canada. Last week was Canada Week or Day or, I don't know, they do the metric system over there.
Today is Canada Day, technically.
Hey, today is Canada Day. Well, when you listen to it, it'll be yesterday. Now I'm going into Hispanic, I guess. So in honor of the Great North, we have a game about Canada and the famous actors who came from it. Well, you see, Canada, we're real nice in Canada, so we don't believe in winners or losers. So really, you're all winners.
Oh, okay.
So congratulations.
You're starting.
So
to
I have a series of questions.
Hispanic again.
Yeah,
I know. It's gonna happen. I apologize to the neighbors to the north and south. I live in the middle. So I'm going to ask a question, and it's going to be, and the answer will be either a famous Canadian or a fictional character who hails from Canada in most cases. Sometimes they're just locations in Canada. All the questions are about Canada. So we're just going to go round robin style, or I'm just going to say it. You guys, if you know the answer, blurt it out. Top score wins. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right, so if you know it, say it. All right, number one. This famous cigar-loving X-Men character was born in Canada.
Wolverine.
That's one for the Justin there.
Wolverine was born in Canada?
Canada. which of the following iconic characters was never played by a Canadian on film? Darth Vader, James Bond, Captain Kirk, or Jason Voorhees? Which one was never portrayed by a Canuck?
James Bond.
Darth Vader.
That's two.
Oh, too late.
Which Canadian town was named after an important planet in the Star Trek universe?
Wait, what?
Which Canadian town was named after an important important planet in the Star Trek universe?
Vulcan!
it doesn't count. Vulcan Alpha.
SETI Alpha 6.
There you go. Who sang the South Park movie's Academy Award nominated song Blame Canada at the Oscars?
Robin Williams.
Hey, there you go, Canada. Canadian actor Nathan Fillion is best known for playing which character in Joss Whedon's cult classic Firefly?
Captain Malcolm McReynolds.
Yeah, Amanda on the board. Which of the following actors was not born in Canada? Seth Rogen, Michael J. Fox, Keanu Reeves, Jim Carrey, or Mike Myers?
Keanu Reeves.
Keanu Reeves is right. Sad Keanu.
Oh. Because he wasn't born in Canada?
No, he's just sad because he's had a bum life.
Oh, yeah. His mom and sister and...
girlfriend and unborn child.
A lot of deaths around him.
Yeah, he's a poor guy. I feel real bad for him. Which iconic American comic book character was co-created by Canadian Joe Shuster?
Superman.
Not if I gave a dramatic pause, give everyone a chance. Which Canadian landmark was believed to be hiding a nuclear missile in Canadian Bacon? In the movie Canadian Bacon.
With John Candy?
The top side of Niagara Falls. I can't think of any other landmark in Canada.
Are there any neighbors to the north, Randy? You should know all about
it. A glacier.
Oh.
A giant tree.
Nope, CN Tower. You're all wrong.
Oh.
On which famous Canadian boat were Jim and Pam married on The Office?
There's a famous Canadian boat?
Yes.
You should have this, Justin. Aren't you the Office file?
No, whatever. I've seen every episode, but I didn't...
The Maid of the...
North?
Missed. Yes. Two of the top five highest grossing films of all time were written and directed by a Canadian. Who is he?
James Cameron.
James Cameron is correct. Can you name the two films?
Titanic and Avatar.
All right. Which Canadian pro wrestler is known as the best there is? The best.
Bret Hart.
There you go. Yes, Bret Hart is the best.
Yes, he is. Fine young man. Uptown all the way.
This think before you answer this one. It may be more than you think. Two of the. Let me skip down here. How many Ghostbusters were played by Canadian actors and who?
I know.
One.
Go for it.
Dan Aykroyd?
There's two.
Uh-huh.
There would be Rick Moranis ended up being a Ghostbuster in Ghostbusters 2, and then the other would be Harold Ramis.
Oh, so close. Anyone else take a guess?
No, can
I would have said Dan Aykroyd instead of Harold Ramis.
There you go. That is correct.
That's too bad.
Dan Aykroyd is a Canuck. All right. In which Canadian city?
Said that just
she did say that first, so if anyone gets a point, one. She does.
I wouldn't have counted Rick Moranis.
Yeah,
see. He did wear the costume, though. He wore a suit.
That's why I didn't count him, because remember Randy's trivia game, or list, had Rick Moranis. Was it an 80s trivia game that you played? Rick Moranis, and it had his last name.
Yeah. Louis Tully.
Yeah, Louis Tully.
All right. What are the names of the two McKenzie brothers who appeared in the 1983 film Strange Brew?
I wasn't even alive.
Oh, gosh. I don't remember.
Called everyone hosers?
Yeah.
Bob and Doug McKenzie.
There you go.
Well, I've never seen that movie. Is it any good?
Yeah, it's pretty good. Right. Who played Canadian TV legend Alex Trebek on Saturday Night Live?
Will Ferrell
is correct. Which of the following actresses was not born in Canada? Ellen Page, Rachel McAdams, Pamela Anderson, Evangeline Lilly, or Kaylee Cacao?
Kaylee, what's her face?
Yeah, Kaylee, what's her face? I will accept from The Big Bang Theory. Which Canadian actor has played three different superheroes? If you need a hint, I can give you the three movies. The first one is Blade Trinity.
What?
Second one is X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds is correct.
Wait, Ryan Reynolds wasn't
Blade? Yeah, yep. He was the good guy in Blade Trinity.
He was buff as fuck in that movie.
He was. Which Canadian actor played as three... Oh, I already did that one, sorry. Which Canadian WWE Hall of Famer is a series regular on this sci-fi hit TV show Haven?
What? There's a wrestler on Haven?
There is. He's probably the big guy.
I haven't watched that show in a long time.
He's got long blonde hair, super tight leather pants.
That guy.
His entrance music is a Rob Zombie song.
I don't know what his name is.
The Edge. You guys. All right. And we'll do one last one. McGill University in Montreal has a building named after a Canadian actor who portrayed a famous TV captain. Who is he?
TV damn it. I don't know who he is.
Canadian TV captain.
Shoot.
He's a pretty important captain.
Gilligan?
Shatner was. Good job, Randy. You.
Yay.
Wait, who?
Had seven.
Shatner.
I like how you said Gilligan when he wasn't a captain.
I couldn't remember who was the captain in Gilligan's Island.
So today, have yourself a nice Canadian beer and some Canadian bacon and enjoy what yesterday was Canada Day. Eh?
American. What do I care about Canada?
Yeah.
They're neighbors to the north. You should care about them.
Yeah.
Celebrate Canada Day all the way up till 4th of July.
Exactly.
Then we can go back to saying F Canada.
Well, that about does it for this week's podcast. We'd like to thank all of our listeners for joining us each and every week. Special thanks to David Guy Levy for coming on the show. And remember, next week we'll be giving away copies of his digital comic book, Back to the Future. So be sure to check geeklegacy.com for your chance to win. Please like us on Facebook and follow us on the Twitter there at Geek Legacy. You can tune into our other podcasts that we have on the site. There's the Pixelated Podcast, which is hosted by Stephen Janes, and it's all about video games. We also have the Comic Corner, which is hosted by Tyler and Jeff, and they review comic books currently on their pull list. Visit geeklegacy.com for all your geek news and reviews. Thank you.